Welcome to Hundreds of Ways, the podcast celebrating entrepreneurship and lifestyle independence. This week, Dr. Anthony Balduzzi shares how his business, the Fit Father Project, has helped over 500,000 men get back in shape in their 40s and beyond. So join us as we explore which of the Hundreds of Ways belongs to Dr. Doozy.
Hey, James. Good evening.
Good evening, Elliot. So this is a first for us in that it's a little behind the scenes. Usually we record these episodes on different days, but today we had another interview earlier today. So Elliot and I are saying good evening twice in one day, but that's the behind the scenes for this.
Revolutionary.
Back to the episode at hand. The last couple episodes, we've had some guests that neither Elliot nor I knew ahead of time, which was exciting for us in that we kind of got to have these first conversations on the mic.
New people.
But now we're back to someone who I've known for a very long time. Anthony Balduzzi, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, so just to kick things off a little bit, can you explain what it is that you do now? I mean, I have a good understanding of it, but I'd love to hear in your own words what the Fit Father Project is and what you do for work.
Okay, so generally speaking, I help people live healthier and happier lives by teaching them stuff on the internet. We have a couple, I mean, more or less, right? We have a couple companies. We have the Fit Father Project, which specifically helps busy dads, mainly guys over 40, lose weight and get on a sustainable health plan. Last year, we started the Fit Mother Project on the back end of the momentum of the Fit Father Project. And I also, something that's actually very relevant today is we run some virtual health and fasting retreats called Revivory. So we're actually leading a group right now through a virtual fast. So you guys caught me in the middle of a fast, which is fun. But essentially, I've been incredibly passionate about health and fitness almost my entire life. And the reason I got so passionate is because growing up, I watched my dad get very sick. He died at 42 years young. And I was 9 at the time. My little brother was 6. And it rocked my world for sure. And it also got me asking a lot of questions about like, what does it take to get and stay healthy? So I got curious about nutrition. I got curious about exercise. And I also, in my little 9-year-old brain at the time, I wanted to become so strong that cancer wouldn't get me. And so I started exercising and it brought me into the weight room. And then it brought me onto the wrestling mat. And as I learned more, people start asking you questions like, man, like, how'd you get so strong? Or what's going on? You start to teach people. And that started to snowball over the course of basically, you know, started when I was around 10, well into high school and into college. I got very much into fitness and competitive bodybuilding. I studied neuroscience and nutrition, and then I went to medical school. And it was all this culmination of learning as much as I could, I guess, following my bliss, which was this health and fitness exploration that was kind of born out of the seeds of the tragedy of losing my dad. So I never intended to be an entrepreneur. Like growing up, you would ask me, do you want to run a business? Like, no, man. Like I wanted to play basketball and I wanted to like lift weights. Like, and I wasn't good at basketball. The point is I followed something that I loved. And in time, I learned that in the marketplace that we're all participating in, you get paid in proportion to the value that you can create for people. And it turns out that in today's market and in today's culture and society, especially in the West, like health is a big problem for so many people. And so I've kind of figured out ways to help people fix that. And I started teaching people online, and it was just basically emailing people, creating meal plans. And then as I continue to do this, it starts to solidify into something that ends up being the Fit Father Project when I attach that to my life story. And now we've literally touched the lives of over 500,000 guys in over 100 countries. And we have a great YouTube channel, online programs, supplements, all the shtick. But it was never the plan. It just kind of like all unfolded this way. I'm just a guy who really liked to do push-ups because his dad died.
So I want to talk, I want to definitely focus in on the work stuff, but since Anthony and I have known each other for so long, I have to get my little personal embarrassing moment and
little jab in there.
When Anthony started wrestling, he just, this enthusiasm you can hear in him talking about his work right now, he carries that literally 24/7. I don't think I've ever seen you not be smiling and driven and enthusiastic. When you started off wrestling, it didn't matter if you were winning or if you were losing, if you were tired, how hard the workout was, like you were just always ready to go and you were always ready to push it further. And I think that is something that is why you are where you are right now with this, like you said, 500,000 people touched the Father Project. That's an insane number of clients.
Over 100 countries too. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. Thanks for reflecting that. It is fun. I guess it's just that enthusiasm you have for life that then carries you as opposed to me carrying it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you find something that you really enjoy and then you just attack it like you have, that's where success comes out.
Uh-huh.
And what a beautiful thing to come out of such a tragic event early on in your life that can really shape people in one of two ways or one of many ways, but come out of that with a lot of grief and pain and then bring that forward into your life. But also, instead, you found a way to really use that as a catalyst to, as you said, you didn't know what you were building at the time, but it was that through line that stayed with you for so long and then really evolved into being part of the mission as to what you're doing now. I think it's just a beautiful story.
You're right. And it brings up that like Steve Jobs quote in my mind, like you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. And I think it's very much like that in my experience. And in my understanding of life thus far, it's a process of alchemy. We can't control what happens to us, but we have the ability to transmutate, I guess, any kind of experience into something in the direction of will and goodness and the things we want to create in the world and value. So if we can have that frame, then it really doesn't matter what happens to us. It's like, it's what we do. It's all fodder. Like the more stuff that happens to us, the more fodder we have to transmute and help other people too.
I love that quote because it so perfectly encapsulates this theme we've talked about a lot of times on this podcast. Hindsight's 20/20. You never know going forward how all the dots are going to connect, but then you look back and you realize, oh, of course that led to this or that. So I guess my next question from that is, when you went to medical school, did you have this in mind? Was it, oh, I want to build this project, or were you seeking to do something entirely different?
Well, a mix of both those things. When I'd been studying health in high school, about 5-6 years, because I started so young, I learned that you could get paid to help people. I had my first job as a personal trainer. And so in my mind, I started to have these gears turning on like, man, I don't want like a quote unquote necessarily regular job. I can just do this stuff and find ways to be able to give value and be able to make a living from that too. But I was also very impacted by looking at the lives and careers of guys like Tony Robbins, for example. When my dad passed away, my mom was listening to a lot of motivational takes. So I got a lot of Tony Robbins growing up, right? So, but like what struck me is not just like what Tony shared, which I think is valuable stuff, but also like how Tony lived. He kind of existed in this, like, I'm creating seminars and experiences and books and able to share that with people. And that really stuck with me. I guess maybe I always had a little bit of archetype of wanting to teach people because I've been doing it so long with health and fitness. And I'm like, man, I kind of want to just find a way to teach this stuff. So I went into medical school with the idea that I wanted to teach. And I thought it was very fitting because the word doctor comes from the root docere, which means to teach and instruct. So I thought like, man, I'm going here to like learn even more, to add more depth to my knowledge so that I can actually teach and instruct people. Now, I didn't know the Fit Father Project was the thing. In medical school, I started my first website called healthybookshelf.com. And I was just reading all these health books and like writing about them. It went nowhere, but I did learn how to build a website. So that was the big win there, right? And then I started a new website called Halftime Fitness, which was the V1 of Fit Father Project. It was like my idea is like the halftime of life. I'm going to help these people. And it was, again, a terrible website, but I learned some more about marketing. And then it starts to all come together into what ended up becoming the Fit Father Project, which is connecting, I guess, like the logistics of how to do this stuff with like the technology, with the skills and expertise of what I'm very good at, with the story of why I do those things. And what do you get when you combine those things in my personal experience? You get the Fit Father Project. And then I didn't plan on making the Fit Mother Project, but when you have that many guys who have wives, et cetera, and sisters, like they're like, hey, we need something for women. So now we have that. Yeah. So, and then it all kind of unfolds from there.
Something we talk about a lot is this kind of myth of the overnight success. And in entrepreneurship literature and in entrepreneurship media, you hear a lot of this guy had this idea and then now he's the next Steve Jobs. But the reality of almost all overnight successes is what you just described, right? Where you try something and it doesn't work, but you learn something. You try something else, it also doesn't work. Maybe it works a little bit better, but you learn something more. And then finally, things come together. You have this idea, the Fit Father Project. It ties in with your story. You bring in all of these lessons that you've learned, and it's a success. It looks kind of like an overnight success, but really, it's something that you were working on way back with that first website, with the healthy bookshelf.
Healthy bookshelf, yeah.
I think that's just a fantastic thing for people who are just starting out is whatever your idea is, you should try it. Because look, you're right. It's probably not going to be the idea that gets you success, but you're going to learn something and it's going to tie in to down the road when you do get that idea, the one, and can actually execute it finally.
Mm-hmm. That's 100% by my experience. And just to be fully transparent, I say we because we have a team now, but I didn't make any money with the Fit Father Project for about 4 years.
Sure.
When I had our first team member, Stuart, who came on board, he's a guy who was reading this blog that I was continuing to write, even though no one was really reading it. Like, he found it and he's like, hey, man, I like this idea. Like, can I write for you? And I'm like, sure. And all the money that the business made selling at the time $10 ebooks went to Stuart's pay. And so, and then it took another about year and a half for us to really gain some more traction. And I don't know exactly how and why it works that way, but it seems to be so. Like, especially, well, I do know like logistics of like online marketing, which is important for anyone these days who wants to kind of like broadcast, whether it's a podcast or whether it's a business, a brand, your videos on YouTube, whatever you're passionate about. It takes persistent effort and you have to keep on dripping on the thing before anyone's going to care. And that means that you have to care more than anyone else. You have to be the one who's just not willing to quit. And if you can stick in the pocket long enough, you're going to win. And I'll be like, this is a cool, just to relate to this. So we've had the Fit Father Project being very successful for a number of years. We started the Fit Mother Project last year. It didn't just start doing well until about 2 months ago. And we have an established business, a team of like 15 plus people. We know exactly what we're doing. Right. And we have the momentum of having like a huge customer base. It didn't start doing well until a couple months ago. So these things just generally take time.
That's fascinating. I would love to dive in on the differences that you've experienced between marketing the Fit Father Project and marketing the Fit Mother Project. These are related audiences, they're related demographics, but the culture of male fitness and female fitness, especially in 40 and overs, is quite different. Have you guys noticed any differences in your marketing approach?
Well, see, I think our core messages are basically the same. And that's like, regardless of gender, there are some specifics in the what you might do on the nutrition exercise side of things. But it's basically that, hey, busy people need solutions that are simple and sustainable with their health, and they need to be specific to where they're at in life, how their body feels, et cetera. So those through lines have been very much the same. And we even had a Fit Mother program with the Fit Father Project before we launched the Fit Mother Project. So it was like a seed that came off the tree that was already there. But what I think is fascinating and maybe a valuable lesson is how the businesses started, quote unquote, popping off was very different. With Fit Father Project, this is about 7 years ago, we wrote a lot of articles. This was the time where SEO was like a very popular thing. It's like, you got a blog, you got to write articles. So we wrote 500 articles over the span of like 10 years or whatever. And over time, one of those articles does well, gets you traffic, and then you start to get this momentum effect. With Fit Mother, our SEO still stinks because it takes time. But what did work for us is YouTube. YouTube was like the impetus that started doing that. And again, we produced 100 videos. We're literally getting no subscribers for the longest time. And then one day you wake up and you have 30,000 more subscribers because something just happens to pop off. So I think the lesson is you never know when that time's going to be, but you stay persistent. And just because you did something one way the first time doesn't mean it was going to be the same way the next time you do it. Because Fit Mother, we didn't expect YouTube was going to be the way that we started getting a little bit of a foothold in this marketplace, but it is.
So I think one of the things for entrepreneurs is you're always told that you're supposed to validate your product in the marketplace before you go and you build all this thing or spend years on it. How did you know without getting that validation of getting the YouTube subscribers or getting the viewership or having those purchases, how did you know that there was a need in the market and how are you continually just inspired to keep moving and keep plugging away year after year and keep going and not give up? Because I think that's some people don't know when. I'll stop talking and let you answer.
No. It's a great point. I think I was fortunate enough to not have a traditional business education where I knew these things. And I think I was fortunate because I didn't constrain my thinking into those ways. I understand a lot of that stuff now, but when we started the Fit Father Project, and I'll start there because that was like, I didn't know that it was going to work. I just knew that like I had a system of eating that was very effective for my clients. And I was going to like hell or high water, I was going to sell this damn meal plan to somebody. Like, and so I was going to figure that out. I knew that like I rested on the laurels of, I think in the early days, honestly, some pride and ego was a big driver. I'm like, I look around, I see a lot of people selling a lot of garbage online and I have really good stuff. And if I can't figure out a way to make this happen, again, disclaimer, it took me years to figure it out. But if I couldn't figure it out, like I was going to, period, even if it, I didn't even expect it to be like a big business. Now, with the Fit Mother Project, it was a little different because I knew we already had people asking us for the business. It's not a business I started. It was a business our customers asked us for. Sure. And it was because we'd really nailed the messaging of connecting people. So this is like the Fit Father Project, the Fit Mother Project. It's not about health and fitness. It's really about the greater things that health and fitness bring into your life. Family, longevity, memories, energy, all these things that kind of transcend just the physical. So we already knew that message resonated with a lot of people, and we already had people asking us for it. So that's the benefit of starting a second business, even though it might be slow. But the first one, I guess I didn't know, other than the fact that the health and fitness seemed like it was a massive problem. I did some like demographic research and some of the market research ahead of time and checked some of that stuff out. And it's not like people were automatically being skinny in a couple years later. So there's still a need.
Yeah.
It's a good industry to be in because it's a problem that never goes away, right? It's not a new class of technology is not going to come out next year and suddenly invalidate. Like, health is a challenge that people face every day for their entire lives.
Mm-hmm. And largely because it's based on human behaviors. Mm-hmm. It's not lack of like available solutions. The health food is there, exercise equipment's there, and probably in excess, right? It's the psychology of how do you help teach people how to steer themselves in the good direction over the long haul. It's the psychology component that's so essential to this. And that's really where we have differentiated in terms of the magic of our program. We figured out how to make this like our eating habits very sticky. You don't see us advertising we're vegan or we're keto or we're this or we're that, or you got to do this kind of exercise. It's more about like the through line of these habits that help people succeed long term.
Really quickly on that note, I'm curious, and this is a little bit of my own curiosity peeking here, but I recently read a book. Are you familiar with Garth Davis?
Mm-hmm.
In his book, he was talking about how in medical school, he had overall an entire 30 minutes of training over all of his years in medical school that dealt with nutrition. Is that something that you find to be the case in Western medicine and the educational process, that nutrition really isn't spoken about or discussed?
Yes, it has been that way. It's changing massively. Mm. We've had this intersection between what we call conventional and alternative medicine. It's kind of come into this head of like functional medicine, where now I guess it's kind of like, oh, we figured out that the gut microbiome is super important for immune system and inflammation. Oh, wow. The food you eat infects that. Oh, wow. The drugs we prescribe all the time affect those. So we start to see things in like a multi-system holistic aspect. So yeah, it's all coming to a head. And I think a lot of traditionally trained docs now are getting additional training in nutrition. And there still is a big machine too, because like the medical system's not just for the healthcare of an individual, it's for the healthcare of an entire country. So there's still the machine of how do we put band-aids on problems, because we have over 300 million problems here, right? So there's still those kind of prescriptions, but a lot of things have to change. And I think the most empowering thing is that the majority of chronic diseases that people experience, let's just say blood sugar dysregulation, high blood pressure kind of stuff, even mental emotional stuff, is largely due to lifestyle, to sleep, to movement, to nutrition, and all the lack thereof. So there's a big opportunity for all of us to take our health into our own hands in that sense. But sometimes you need a guide because it's a little complicated.
I read a statistic today that I thought was had no idea. I'm probably going to mess up the details, so we'll double check this and put in the liner notes the actual statistic. But it said that over 50% of chronic pain cases are due to autoimmune conditions. And that was crazy to me. My family, autoimmune issues are really common with us. And a lot of the ones that I have personally, I've been able to manage through health, diet, fitness. And so hearing Anthony I should probably call you Dr. Anthony. Hearing Dr. Anthony's medical advice here, so many chronic conditions are diet, their exercise, their sleep. And it's good to hear that that's finally kind of being included in medicine.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the health coaches and non-doctors have pushed the industry in a very good way, because there's just like a lot of great functional health coaches. There's people on YouTube with literally millions of subscribers that are touching more people's lives by teaching about nutrition than a traditional doctor may in their entire lifetime. So yes to all of that.
I'm going to pivot here for a little bit, unless you have something else, James. But one of the unique parts about talking to you, Anthony, is you don't sell a specific service that's limited by your capacity to talk to individuals, but instead it's more of a product that you sell online. You said that you have all of this traditional training or non-traditional training from the different experiences that you had through the years. What was the process like of as it started gaining traction and you started building out your team, and it went from you to the single writer to now you said you have a team of 15 plus. At the beginning, being able to manage everything, what was that like? You're producing content, you're running the business, you're doing the accounting, the marketing, it looks like online you have your own protein powder line now and merchandise. And there's a video from Brian Urlacher on there that's, you know, just how do you manage all of that and that transition from it being yourself and then delegating to a team and growing and that sort of thing.
Yeah. In prep for this, I was thinking about some of the challenges. And I think that is there's two initial challenges. There's one, making enough money so that this can be your thing or that you can survive and ideally pay someone who's willing to work for you for passion purposes, not because they're getting super rich off you off the beginning. You know, they need to be able to also survive to a certain extent, but someone who's really indoctrinated into what you're doing. This has been my experience. And number two is learning the skills of how to like let go of the reins, delegate, and give that to a number two. Those are like the two biggest challenges we had, was getting the business up to like $10,000 a month so I could survive and Stuart could survive. And then number two is like, how do we start taking all the things that I was doing, building all the websites, all the code, all the writing, and start to teach those and put it into a system where other people can pick it up. So I think it comes down to a little bit of like a, even if you're like a solopreneur person right now or just starting off on a mission, is documenting what you do
so important
early. And it, like, because those are the habits that you don't think are important until you are like, oh crap, I need to train somebody. I got to like go document this. So like that stuff I probably would have done if I knew business better when I started. But eventually you have to build the documentation because you need to train someone. You need to create like a process for how these things go. And I hired someone who had an experience with Stuart in hiring. So he had skill sets, like he's 10 years older than me. He has a lot of skill sets in business as a manager and hiring. So we're able to like leverage his abilities to go do these things. I think there's a really cool business book called Rocket Fuel that basically talks about two main roles in a business. There's like a visionary and there's more of like an implementer. Like Stuart ended up being like an implementer. I was able to stay in like a little higher visionary role. I mean, I'm still in the weeds. Trust me, I don't just like not do any visionary stuff. I'm not like a Steve Jobs kind of character, but the first hire is probably like the most important. And it can either be, if you're lucky, your right-hand person or someone who is interfacing directly with your customers would be the second option if you can't find that perfect person yet. Someone who is taking care of your customers, because regardless of what business or service you're in, I've learned that if you really make your entire process customer-centric and you take care of them, they're going to tell you what they need and what to build. Like, we didn't think of all these programs to build. They told us what to build because we emailed all of them personally. Every single person who bought an ebook from us was actually in direct communication with me. I was literally a doctor who sold them a $10 ebook, talking to them on email threads for like 20, 30 emails. It's like, it was the least scalable thing ever. And I was losing money on it. But but I got to figure out what we now call like our customer journey, which is everything. We know so much about what a guy needs from step A to step Z so we can build out this experience. It's like you get on Fit Father Project, you join our email list. And if you join our program, it's like Disneyland. We have every ride, every experience kind of crafted out because we've been so involved with the customer journey.
I think it's really important to note that that Disneyland experience that you offer now, where you've got all these different rides for all these different needs, is a place that you got to, that you worked towards. You didn't go wake up one morning in college and go, oh, I know what I need to build. I need to build the one-stop fitness solution for fathers. You said, no, I've got this meal plan and I know that it'll work. And then because you started building these relationships and started talking to these folks, then you got to a point where you could now offer this Disneyland experience. So I think that's a huge detail that you added there.
Yeah, that's essential. And I think the one thing to build, if you're going to build something first, is like, what is the simplest, highest leverage thing that's going to produce results for your clients? So when it comes to fitness, it is nutrition. If you don't teach them anything about anything else, but you give them a meal plan that they can follow and enjoy, they're going to lose weight. They're going to feel better. They'll be more energetic. So we did build the entire program off the heart and soul of that meal plan. And then it all expands out from there.
So to interject really quick, you mentioned you're doing a fast right now.
Yes.
I cannot imagine having the amount of energy that you have on a fast right now. So you're now running this incredible company, the Fit Father Project. You have the Fit Mother Project. And did you call it Revivery? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's the virtual fasting. And you know, we used to be in person, but you know, the whole thing, coronavirus changed everything.
Yeah,
a little hard. Coronavirus changed that a little bit. So you have these businesses, you have a team of 15 people. Walk us through just kind of what your day-to-day is like and what your job, if you will, is these days.
Well, morning routine is very much like a regimented thing for me, where I'll wake up, I'll immediately rehydrate, I go for a walk with my dog, and then I sit down to meditate. And no food gets into the system until I do those things. And I'm not even saying at this point, that is not a routine I did when I was necessarily growing the business. You guys are just asking what my personal routine is now. That is very important for me, my well-being, and like my spiritual development is to do these things in the morning. Mm-hmm. I start work now at generally in the morning. My routine is not like as rigid as it used to be. I was down to the minute when I was starting because I felt a lot of pressure for a time crunch. So if I can give someone a light on the end of the tunnel story is like you actually get more relaxed after you get traction because, you know, it's like my morning routine ends when it ends and I hop to work sometime in the morning. I'm mostly involved in like our highest end projects in terms of like business growth. So right now we're developing a lot of like products and supplements. We're designing a new e-commerce store for Fit Mother Project. We're doing some things with some different partnerships. So I'm moving the ball forward on those. Honestly, my day is spent almost entirely on the laptop. I have like a awesome ergonomic workstation that I hang out at. I have a tea brewed. I'm on Slack and I'm on Basecamp and I'm working with the team. I'm at the stage right now with our businesses where if I didn't want to work, I wouldn't have to and they would do fine, but I am the growth driver. So, and we're at a stage right now where we're investing back into the business, we're growing. So I'm still working very long days, but I love what I do. So I'm like so happy to do it. Mm-hmm. There will be a workout sometime in the day. My meal timing schedule setup as we teach at the Fit Father Project is very regimented. Like I know when I'm eating throughout the day, just so that it becomes more or less just a mindless thing, like a mindless in a good way, like more automatic might be the better word. And I have a evening wind down routine and family time where I have like a hard cutoff, usually at around 6, but sometimes like this week was particularly crazy. I'll share a funny story. Over the weekend, we actually got attacked by 130,000 Chinese bots who filled out our protein powder order form for the tune of like $8 million worth of sales. Absolutely crazy. So this was a different week than normal because this was a new issue that we hadn't faced before. But
how does one deal with that?
That's a totally different conversation. Bring me back if you want to hear about how to deal with Chinese bots. But we're here. We got to the other side of that. But so this week's been a little different. But overall, I think it's like I'm doing routines every day, typically on the beginning and end of the day, that is investing in what I'd call like my spiritual well-being with the meditation, et cetera. I'm exercising and or moving my body in some fashion every single day. I have very much like regimented nutrition, particularly in the first couple meals. There can be some more flexibility in the last meal because when it comes to someone who's starting a project or a business, I believe that you should conserve as much of your willpower and keep things as simple as possible so that you don't have decision fatigue and you can like move forward on what you're doing. So you can remove the guesswork out of some of these things. So that's why I think for entrepreneurs, people starting things, like having a standardized first meal, whenever that is, whether you're intermittent fast, whether you have breakfast, doesn't matter, whatever that first meal is, should be standardized and have like a lot of great micronutrition, like a lot of vitamins and minerals in that thing. And if you just do that one thing, and if it can be like a liquid meal, like a shake of sorts, it's even easier to digest, not as much digestive stress, and like it's dialed in, you don't have to think about it. So that's, I guess, my routine in a nutshell. I think I probably work 6 days a week. I take Saturdays completely off. Like I kind of like observe what I'd call my version of the Sabbath. Like work stops Friday night, Saturday is all off. I love working half day on Sunday to get like a head start into the week. Yeah. It's so good because you can nail a lot of things. It's actually nice for me because that's a time when my team is not on. So I can really get into some deep work because quite frankly, when you are at the top of this pyramid that you've built down, like you are the biggest servant leader of the company. Like their problems are your problems. And so oftentimes if you have a plan for the day, that plan can get derailed by bots or problems your team has. Like those are for me to fix and like architect. Yeah. So I think working on like the big projects, and then I have a Stuart who started off, let this be known. And this is really cool. Like as long as you have in smart, driven, honest people who are aligned with your mission, they can grow into things that you probably couldn't even imagine they could. Stuart was a guy who started writing blogs for me way back in the day. I don't know what I paid him per blog, $25. Now he's the CEO of the company of 15 people, right?
Of 15 people,
yeah. And because who knows the business better than him and I? We built the whole structure, right? And there's no one else that could probably do his job quite as good as him at this point because everything we built is a byproduct of that. So on the hiring talent, I think that that's the cool thing is it's like there's bigness and smallness. Like start small, find people that really care and are honest. Mm-hmm. And everyone who works for us, although there are certain people in Arizona where I live who are here, is virtual. So, and everyone's virtual. Yeah. So everybody, everyone's virtual. And that's the cool thing is you can build a company as long as you have mm-hmm. like good, honest, good valued people. And it works just great.
So just to recap really quick, you didn't get taught how to deal with bots in medical school.
No, just viruses.
Just viruses. Okay, gotcha. I was hoping you'd come back with that one. James, go ahead. Take it away.
So one thing you touched on, I just want to bring back up because I think it's a common misconception from usually younger entrepreneurs, but people who are aspiring, especially people who are inspired by people like Steve Jobs, you mentioned earlier, Tony Robbins, you know, these kind of big personalities. They often have this misconception that when you start to grow your team and you start to hire, that it's, you mentioned this top of the pyramid position, and that it's very much this like, oh, now I'm in charge and now I get all this power and responsibility. But really growing a company is really more about, like you said, becoming the ultimate servant, yes. right? Like you're in charge and you're the one steering the ship, but everything stops with you. And so if anything, I think it's Gary Vee talks about how every time he hires someone, he's hiring someone that he's going to work for, right? Mm-hmm. Not the other way around. And that's a huge, huge thing, I think, to people that are just starting out or that maybe that are thinking of doing this down the road. Hiring people is a huge responsibility and it's a huge act of service in that role.
Mm-hmm. That's been my exact experience.
So Anthony, one of the really unique facets of your business is you've really grown your content strategy, your content marketing strategy. I don't know if that's what it started out being. I don't know if you thought it was going to be a content marketing strategy, but that's what I would call it now. You have this YouTube channel that's done really well. I think it, I don't remember what the exact number was, but James was telling me that you won one of their prestigious awards for subscribers, which I always knew.
I think like this week, we're about to cross 300,000 subscribers, which will be cool.
All right. Cool. Congratulations. Oh, thanks. Can you tell us a little bit about how that got started? And you said one day you wake up with 30,000 subscribers. What was the journey in getting, growing that to where it is now?
Yeah, it's so funny. So we started off focusing on the SEO blog stuff. It was Google search traffic.
And if you don't mind me asking, can you give a year just because this changes so quickly? Yeah. It helps to contextualize that.
Probably 2012, 2013 is when we were really writing a lot of blogs. And what we did a little research and we're like, there is no one writing on very specific longer tail keywords like weight loss for men over 40, muscle building for men over 50, like very, very specific, lower search volume. But if someone's searching that, like they're our guy. So we wrote all those articles. And then over time, those things started winning pages, ranking and getting to the front pages of Google. And then we get more traffic, right? And then we expand out the blogs. Now, what we learned as the search engine optimization, the algorithm continues to update, that time on page was a really big deal, right? You want to have people, Google's algorithm senses that there's engagement when someone's hanging out on your site. So we're like, we should shoot videos for every one of our articles. So like that was my job, was to shoot a video for every one of our couple hundred articles. And we were dummies.
You were making those videos. Yeah, it wasn't agency you were hiring. You were doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the cool thing about being ideally, it's really beneficial in my experience to be the subject matter expert in the industry you're doing too, because mm-hmm. it enables you to produce content very quickly. And I think speed of content is very important. Speed and quality, if you can find this. There's people that have better quality content in terms of editing production, but I think sure. very few people can match our ability to produce super valuable, high quality stuff. And that's good. So that's an aside. So anyways, we shoot all these videos for the blogs because we're like, we're going to get better time on page. And we're dummies. We didn't even really think about YouTube. We're just like, we should probably upload it to that YouTube thing. And so we just put them all as unlisted. We didn't make them public at all. And then we ended up getting a bank of 100, 200 videos and our time on page improved on Google. And that was good. And I was like, well, what if we made these public on YouTube? So we tore them all down and we re-uploaded them. We'd had a couple hundred at that point. We re-uploaded them one by one over a series of almost a year because we had such a bank. We're just let's roll these out. And again, same thing. No one really cared for a long time. But then all of a sudden you wake up and one of your videos pops off. A video called How Long Does It Take to Build Muscle? I put it in of our best videos, it's in the middle of the pack, nothing exceptional, yeah. but that's what YouTube wanted to feature. And so that just got a lot of eyeballs to start bringing things in. And then momentum starts to build on that platform. And I think a couple cool things that I personally enjoy, and these are personal, I guess, preferences you could call them, is I didn't build the Anthony Balduzzi project. I built mm-hmm. the Fit Father project, which is cool because it actually makes us, I believe, a little more effective. There are a lot of YouTube people who are YouTubers. You know, they have personality-centric right. brands, they're vlogging, and it's all about them. Like, I am our video content guy, so, like, I'm the guy you see on camera, but it's never about me. It's about the conveying of the information or the message or, like, the useful bit of that day. And I think for people who are also starting out to produce content, that seems to be the more valuable mind frame to be in, because it does, again, removes the parts of our ego that are always worried about, like, self-image, how we're portrayed, and it puts us into that servant mindset and that feeling, which enables all the goodness to flow through us, as opposed to us being this locus of sun that's shooting the rays out. That is good, especially if people struggle to produce content. Like, getting to that mindset makes it so much easier. You're just a conduit for, like, the goodness, I guess you could say.
And that's something I noticed, actually, and I'm not sure if this is a conscious decision, but it doesn't seem that you've put a lot of energy into building a personal brand. It's more about the brand itself of the business. Is that something that you've considered doing or evolving into, as I know that's a growing field right now, as a founder, as an entrepreneur, doing that? Or have you really decided to focus on building the business and the brand of the business itself?
I was planning on doing it, like, a couple years ago. But, like, I have a buddy who runs, like, a personal brand website company, and I bought the whole package, did the photo shoot, but I never went through with it. And I'm so glad for me personally that I didn't. I think it is the right fit for some people. And I think there even would be value in doing that and potentially building an Anthony Balduzzi brand so that you can get more people, have eyeballs on this network of things we have. But it's not for me. I'm honestly, as a part of this business stuff, I'm as much on a spiritual quest too. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily feel like we need to get into the full details on that. But for me, like, strengthening the ego image of what Anthony Balduzzi represents is not something I'm investing time in. Again, I'm a servant for the mission that is the Fit Father Project, Fit Mother Project, Revivory, and whatever else, like, happens to come down the way. I think there's a lot of value in it. I mean, look at what Gary Vee's done. It's amazing. I think you need to have the right personality fit for it. I think there are a lot of pitfalls to those types of brands and businesses. One, you are on the hook to continuously produce content about you. Like, often. I mean, there are exceptions to that. And it's easy to get caught up in all that business too, which I think does lead to some hardship down the road. So for me, it's not the path. My team has urged me to do it, but I stand very firm in not wanting to do that.
And that's great to own that. Just, like, be really strong in owning that. That's not something you're going to do. You're not oscillating back and forth. Is this something? Do I want to get into it? Tasting it. You're just, that is what it is.
Mm-hmm. And I also think, as entrepreneurs, attention is probably, I say entrepreneurs, but anyone today, attention is one of our most valuable assets. And ultimately, everything online is just trying to get bits of your attention. And so that's why staying away and or being very judicious about how you're being influenced all day, whether it's on YouTube or on your social media platforms, that's, like, whittling away at your creative energy that you could be using at your thing, is so essential. So we use Facebook because we have a lot of Facebook groups and all of our customers are in groups. So we're in there. But I personally don't maintain an Instagram page or anything like that, or really update personal on Facebook anymore, because it's no longer, one, necessary, but two, I also think it can be net harmful if you're not careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Something that you guys do so correctly. A lot of people that are coming into the entrepreneurship game, whether that's through services or products, are so focused on their solution. They have this idea, this app, this product, this service, and they are so gung-ho about, I'm going to sell this thing. And going back to your story earlier, that was kind of what you had with this meal plan, right? Is you were so sure this thing was right. What you guys do so right now, and it ties into this not wanting to have the personal brand, is it's called the Fit Father Project. Who it's for is in the brand. Mm-hmm. And having that customer-centric, I mean, literally, like, every one of your videos says, this is for fathers who want to get fit, right? Like, it's like, you can't, no matter what else you do, no matter what else you say, where else you post things, that part of your brand is first and foremost the thing that people see. And that is, in my opinion, I mean, you guys couldn't have been more correct in that decision.
Yeah. And I think when you start to learn that your business is essentially, or your project is the structure that enables your customer's hero journey, when you start thinking in that frame, and I'll say that again, because I think your business or your mission or your thing, your project is the architecture that enables your customer's hero journey. They're the hero of everything. And the more you can make them the hero, like, you win. Because you're ultimately successful in accordance to how much they're successful. And so all your communication is about them. And I'm sure there's exceptions if you are really truly selling, like, a widget, like a golf product that, like, helps your elbow stay straight. But even there, they're not buying a widget. They're buying transformation, you know?
There's a story there. There's got to be a story there.
There is. Carry on.
All right, really quick. I have to ask as well, because this is just something that we ask a lot of people that come on, is imposter syndrome ever anything that you deal with? I mean, one of the things I noted when we first started talking was you don't have kids, you're younger. And so you're developing a product and speaking to an audience that's not who you are, that you don't have really their experience per se. You do have deeply personal experience in the realm, but it's not your own lived experience, if you will. Is that ever something that you run into or have dealt with?
Not anymore, but I dealt with it for years, literally years, maybe even 5 years. Well, first off, man, like there is a certain element to all this stuff. Like you fake it till you make it. You need to like, I don't mean that in like a bad way. I mean it like you have to see yourself in the beginning as better than you are, or at least have the belief in the oak tree inside of the seed that you currently are. You have to know that's where you're going. So you have to have that. And when you have that drive, but you look into your external reality and you're like, wow, this is really not matching up, that's where you feel imposter syndrome. So honestly, in a way, it's not a bad thing. It's a very natural thing. You feel this inner pull of like greatness, but at the same time, you feel like I'm not quite there yet. And so there are a couple ways to navigate that. One is to both observe it as a happening that is, because it is just something that's very natural, accepting that there. And two is also just to put in the work. The first thing that I could hang my hat on, I can't be a 45-year-old man, but what I can do is know how to produce results. So I started kind of being like, okay, what if I could be like Mr. Results for these guys and just know that like if anyone were to question something, and this is when I was still in that imposter syndrome, here is my book of transformations. You're not buying me, you're buying this. It's the thing that's bigger than me. Two, I did spend time becoming a credentialed expert in the field. I don't think that's necessary for everyone, but even as a young doctor, it was helpful to be a doctor. Right. And I did grow a beard and like everything. Right. Like
I bought a pair of scrubs, even though I was working.
For yeah, months. Exactly. All those things. Right. I mean, and I think over time, when you start to blossom into that oak tree, or at least you're like, I no longer feel like a seed. I feel like a baby oak tree. The imposter syndrome fades away. I'm glad it has. At the same time, I also appreciate the experience because it did give me a big amount of drive in the beginning to work longer hours than would ever have truly been sane. It was both for the mission. It was also for proving to myself that this was something that could be done
right
by this innate capacity I feel like I had. So I think the ego in a weird way will come back to bite us in a lot of ways. But in early stages, it can be used in a productive manner for fuel for moving us forward.
I think that's so beautiful how you described imposter syndrome, which is something that is seen as such a negative to so many people. And it's such like a worry of being an entrepreneur is something that can actually be a positive. You know, if you believe that that oak tree is inside that seed, like you said, and you know that if you put in the work, that oak tree will blossom. The imposter syndrome is more of a, what do I need to do to get there than it is a, oh my God, why am I doing this? And that's such a beautiful way to phrase it. And I think super helpful to people who are just starting out. So one of the last things we always like to cover in our episodes is advice for entrepreneurs. But you have a really unique perspective in that I'd love to hear your advice for entrepreneurs from a business perspective. But health and fitness is also a really important topic for entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurship is something that's associated with late nights, early mornings, poor diet, lack of sleep, sitting a lot, those sorts of things. So I'd love to hear, you know, Dr. Anthony Balduzzi's advice, both as an entrepreneur and as a doctor.
Perfect. Entrepreneur first, just because you brought it up first. I think the first thing it would be to become, I wrote down in prep for this, the word world class, but it's not the right word. You need to become excellent at your skill set. Like ultimately, like whatever it is you do, if you're a graphic designer, if you're a speaker, if you're a coach, like you need to become excellent. And not just like think you're excellent, but become excellent. And I think excellent is driven by the results that you can produce for people. So you need to kind of develop that early body of work. Reflecting back on our journey, and I'll keep this brief, it's like I had to really create those first few case study transformation stories for the early clients to be able to have anything to show someone that's going to convince the next guy to join. And so getting that early body of work based on your skill set, you really need to invest in like sharpening that saw. The second thing is, this is more general advice, but I think it applies to almost everyone in today's economy, is to get comfortable on camera and video. And maybe if you're a writer, there may be an exception to this, but essentially, like, you need to become excellent at communication. And it's not to say you're going to shoot video for a living, but what is marketing other than conveying a message that's going to touch someone in such a way that compels them to an action that's good for them and good for your business? So it's like your ability to communicate in these days is largely at scale is through the medium of video is probably the best way to do it. And look, if you think this is just going away, it's not. It's going to turn into virtual reality, augmented reality. Like our ads are going to be flying on these Google glasses in the subway. They're going to be holograms. So like, I think there is a unique benefit to getting comfortable and be able to communicate these messages. And I think it's going to make you more effective, even if you don't ever become an entrepreneur, even in your own job, it's a good skill set. And like, I practiced, like I've shot so much video, but like I literally used to set up like stuff in our house and just like practice video and it just like practice. I've literally put in thousands, if not tens of thousands of hours. And that's just how you get good at it. And then the third thing is the final business recap is to basically do what's considered like a customer avatar map, like whoever you're trying to serve, like figure out exactly who they are, make up a fictitious person, give them their life story and figure out what are all the steps that are required.
Or even better, go find a real person.
Yeah.
Right. Like
there you go.
Your customer avatars don't have to be fictitious. If you know someone that might be interested in your product or service, start with them.
Yes, that's a very good point. And that also gives you the initial kind of like those case studies and those early wins that are essential. And also, so both the experience of working with that individual and crafting what is the journey that we think they're going to, what are their biggest problems, like three biggest problems, and what are your three biggest solutions to those problems? That ends up being your core product, your core service. So you can solve those problems in a way that's simple and effective at a good price point based on what's in the market. Like you have a foothold to start gathering traction. So in addition to some of the other stuff that was brought up in the conversation, that's probably the business advice.
I just want to highlight on the customer avatar thing. This isn't just a marketing tool. This isn't just a product tool. Having a really good understanding, the framework we use at my business is called people, problems, solutions. Understanding the individuals that your product or service targets. In our framework, we use real people because it's real people with real problems. The problem those people have, and then finally coming to the place where it's your solution at the end. That is your messaging. That is your product. For the things we build, which are digital products, that informs how we design them, the features that we put as the most important ones that are most visible. Having that understanding is not marketing. It's not product. It is literally your entire business. It is who you serve, why you're serving them, and what you're offering them, the solution at the end.
That's so well said. And I think I made the mistake reflecting back. I'd say I got lucky, but so many people, like you said, build that solution first. It's the thing that they market without having done the other steps. And it turns out a lot of the time, the thing you built is not the best fit to solve the problem. And so then you got to go refine it or there's friction in the user experience and then it's not there. So if you can start to build from customer avatar, real person first in that direction, you're going to be a lot more successful. Otherwise, you're just kind of guessing and sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. But either way, it's like huge, huge bit of advice for sure. On the health side of things for entrepreneurs, our bodies, we are these biocircadian beings. I think we make the mistake of thinking that because we're disconnected from nature in our rooms and our desks and our laptops, that we're not intimately connected to all the cycles that are happening. And probably the main one is the light-dark cycle. Like the sun rises and it, the light actually hits our eyes, goes to a specific area of the brain that causes the brain to release serotonin. That makes us feel good. And later in the day, that serotonin is converted to melatonin and that helps us rest at night. The light dynamically, there are light receptors in our skin and in our eyes that do this all the time. So for entrepreneurs and people who want to perform at a high level, having a natural rhythm is essential. And I think we can all reflect on times we know we've been totally strung out from late nights, needing to prop up with coffee and like being on a variable schedule, not waking up at the right times, not getting enough sunshine, being up way too late at night, eating at night, stimulants later at night. All these things put you on a roller coaster of dysregulation. And there's really nothing you can do when it comes to your exercise, because that's more stress on the body if you're already in this stress state, or nutrition that can mitigate it a little bit. But let's be honest, what your body really needs is a proper rhythm. So that's why the rhythm is foundational. So I think practically speaking, for most entrepreneurs, it's getting some morning sunlight on the skin and in the eyes sometime before noon, 10 to 15 minutes. I mean, it depends on what your skin color is. The darker you are, the more time you need. But yeah, that's going to be a good thing to entrain that proper pattern. I would also watch out for the blue light and the disrupting lights, screens, and phone time late at night. Like, get blockers on your phones, put night shift mode on your iPhone, get something like Flux or Iris that turns your screen from that very bright light to a more sepia at night, because we know this light dramatically affects your neurochemistry and can cause a lot of problems. And this is where entrepreneurs, it's a vicious cycle, because you're not sleeping well, your rhythm's not great, and then you're stressed. So that's why you did those things, and it makes you more stressed, and then your mood goes to shit. And I've been there. I speak from a big personal experience. The next thing would be to standardize that nutrition plan, like know when you're eating. So anything you can make more proactive doesn't require decisions. So like, decision fatigue is a big thing. Like, we can pare down on the social media, right? And we can actually make our nutrition proactive. We don't have to exert as much of our creative power to figure out what to eat. So I like to think of it as like, every time you want to eat a healthy meal, you have like a friction point in your life for the average person. So let's say it's 7 days out of the week, three meals a day. It could be different for any person, but that's 21 decision points. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is, how can you pave the path for that healthy eating success ahead of time? So what we help people do is basically pick what their go-to healthy foods are. It doesn't matter to me if it's plant-based or if it's keto or if it's this or it's that. It's like, what do you actually enjoy eating that we can all pretty much agree is healthy or a good quality food? You prep those foods in bulk. You cook them in bulk. They're in your refrigerator. They're in your office. So when it comes to mealtime, like, everything is a lot more smooth. For me personally, I'm at a new level of standardization where like, my first meal is pretty much the same every single day. I have a serving of varied fruit, whatever my wife surprises me with. And then I have my morning shake that has its blend of protein powders, a greens powder, different vitamins, minerals, some fiber. And it's like, I know if I had nothing else in the rest of the day in terms of calories, I've met all my micronutrient needs. Like, so it's like, I can fill in calories later, but I know that my body has the vitamins, minerals it needs. And because that meal is not heavy, it doesn't cause a lot of digestive stress. This is something that a lot of people don't understand, is that the brain and the digestive system are constantly in a tug of war battle for blood flow. That's why we feel exhausted after a huge meal. Like, in the United States, we have that Thanksgiving feast. Like, everyone takes a nap afterwards because you're just like, hey, body, here's 3 to 4 pounds of food. Like, deal with this. And so what it does is it sends all the blood to that area to start to break that down. And the problem is, a lot of entrepreneurs do that to themselves with not eating the right kinds of foods. And I also would share that your energy level is very much proportional to your blood sugar level. And this is why having healthy meals that are not causing, but basically like, watching out for the sugar and crap like that that's going to spike your blood sugar all over the place is key. And another thing I'll say on exercise, because I think a lot of people do feel guilty if they don't have the time to exercise. If you're into exercise and fitness, get your formal workouts in. But I would say, for good health, formal workouts are not nearly as effective as daily movement. Like, us humans, we're not designed to do P90X or CrossFit. It's something we can do and there's benefit to it. We're designed to have daily movement, particularly after meals. So I like this concept for entrepreneurs of micro workouts, where a lot of people have this all or nothing thinking, like, I'm just too busy. I can't go to the gym for an hour and a half, and then 30 minutes it takes to travel, so I'm not going to do anything. Well, you certainly have 5 to 10 minutes three times a day. What if you were to break that amount of activity up and sprinkle it throughout the day? Then you've accumulated at the end of the week probably the equivalent of those three workouts, just in smaller bolus doses. And this is some really cool new research. They actually find too that if you do walk after eating a meal, it actually causes your blood sugar regulation to be like substantially better, maybe even 50% better. It's because this blood sugar then actually gets preferentially shunted into these metabolically active, very large leg muscles, and doesn't give you this huge blood sugar spike. So they actually found that one 30-minute walk per day was not nearly as effective as 3 10-minute walks after your main meals. So that's something I would actually consider. And then I don't think there's anyone who will be healthy over the long term sitting down, compressing their spine with bad posture for 8 hours. There's just no way around it. Yep. You're not going to feel good if you're sitting for that amount of time. I invested in a great standing desk kind of setup, and I don't stand all day, but some days I do, some days I don't. It's adjustable. Now, if you're a total remote worker and you're doing things like that, there's these little prop up stands you can get. They're like Roost or something like that. They can prop your laptop up. You get your little USB keyboard or whatever you have, and then you can at least create the aspect of standing at a countertop or something like that. Like, sitting is, over the long haul, not good for your body over the long term. I think that's something to consider for entrepreneurs. There's a lot we can go into. Maybe we even do a full show on this at some point, but I think that's probably enough to end here without overloading everyone.
All super fantastic advice. I will second everything that Anthony just said. It is super important to consider sleep and light and diet and exercise, as a doctor, all of these things are super critical. I don't know. I'm just as an entrepreneur, all these things are super, super critical to having the fuel to work on whatever it is you're working on. So to anyone who wants to get in contact with Dr. Anthony Balduzzi, who's either interested in working with him or just seeing what he's created with the Fit Father Project and now with the Fit Mother Project, I highly recommend checking out his site at fitfatherproject.com or now fitmotherproject.com, as well as YouTube channels. There's tons, like we talked about earlier, hundreds of videos on there, just really great about exercise and diet. And just, I mean, Anthony is so charming in front of a camera. He's been super charming on this episode, but you guys don't have the video feed. So I promise you, your time will not be wasted in going to watch some of these videos. Anthony, again, thank you so much for coming on. It's been so great to catch up with you, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Likewise. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
On next week's episode, talent agent to both rock stars and rock star developers, Rashawn Blumberg joins us to talk about his career protecting talent, his upcoming book, Game Changer, and what it means to be 10X in all aspects of life. Until then, stay safe as you walk whichever of the hundreds of ways belongs to you.